Hello, welcome again to Comic Concerts. Tonight we'll be talking about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is the latest Spider-Man animated movie by Sony, which doesn't suck, actually. So, of course, I'm my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
I love this movie.
Also, this is Red Ink.
Walloping Web Snappers.
All right, so Into the Spider-Verse is, like I said, it's a very interesting movie. It's one of the better, you know what, I would say it's the second best Spider-Man movie I've seen.
Yeah, it's definitely in my top three. I mean, there's not a whole lot, there's not a lot of Spider-Man movies, but it's definitely in my top three favorite Spider-Man movies.
There's seven Spider-Man movies, so there's actually, if you think about superhero movies, that's actually a lot, because there's only, like, honestly, what, actually, no, that's not a good example. Okay, so, yeah, there's quite a few Spider-Man movies, so, yeah. Red, what do you think of Spider-Verse?
I liked it. All
right.
I wouldn't say it was my favorite movie, but it was good. It was enjoyable.
Well, second favorite, in my opinion. I think Spider-Man 2 still beats it.
Amazing Spider-Man 2?
No, Spider-Man 2.
Sam Raimi's. The Raimi's.
Amazing Spider-Man 2?
No, there is no Amazing Spider-Man 2.
It's okay, Ben. Don't think about it. It can't hurt you anymore.
Where Peter's dad shows up at the end because of whatever.
Or you just use the same defense I use when people talk about the Super Mario Brothers movies, and I will not trust the fungus, Red. Just saying. But no, this film is great. I mean, this is, as I've read, like, all the Miles Morales Spider-Man comics from when it was originally introduced in Ultimate Marvel to the, you know, the transfer to Earth 616 at the end of Secret Wars. I really do love Miles Morales as a character, but the version of Miles that we have in the movie, I don't know, maybe it's just the medium of animation and hearing somebody else's voice instead of hearing the voice that I came up with in my head. This version of Miles is my favorite version of Miles that I've seen so far. But just everything clicked about this movie. There really isn't anything I could complain about. I mean, there are nitpicky fanboy things like, how does Kingpin move when he looks like he's just a solid brick of a man? Like, how is he not crushing things under his feet? Like, it shouldn't be possible for the Kingpin in this movie to move.
I love the caricaturized design of the Kingpin. I think that because I think that too many writers, artists who don't embrace the caricaturization just, like, make really dull characters. And I think Kingpin is one of those characters that is larger in life and, you know, really benefits from looking like a looking like a bit of a beast.
Well, but he looks like a comic book character, and that's the best thing about this movie. Is, like, all the villains and the heroes and everything look like they're comic book characters when, like, don't get me wrong, I know you guys weren't that big a fan of, like, say, the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. I mean, we all hate the Marvels, like Spider-Man 2017. I still can't get behind that. But the comic book characters look like comic book characters in the film. And I was going to ask you guys, of the Felonious Five, because weren't there six villains in this film? It's like, no, there's really only five major supervillains that we see. But out of the villains or the heroes, which villain do you think had the best redesign? Don't everyone talk at once.
For me, I would have to say Dr. Octopus.
Yeah.
That was such a great fake out.
It was a good fake out, and it was also, I like the idea of 1980s Cher being Dr. Octopus.
Oh, yeah. And I agree with you. She's probably my favorite redesign of villains. But when I looked at her, I got was it Margaret Atwood that wrote like Handmaid's Tale? You know, kind of got that idea looking at her with like the frizzy hair and like the word, like the friendly and knowledgeable, you know, talking and all that. And then you see her become, well, the most, I want to say sensible, but not in that it, she becomes a female Dr. Octopus, and we've had those in the comics before, but this one I bought a lot more than like the Dr. Octopus, the female Doc Ock that came out of like the Spider clone, or the clone saga in the 90s.
I think there was a good use of this female Doc Ock. I especially like the whole, when Aunt May says, "Oh, great, it's Liv."
Well, just the fact that Aunt May, I love. Aunt May was voiced by the legendary Lily Tomlin. And I've been a huge fan of her. Like, I saw a whole bunch of movies with her as a kid. Like, I loved her Aunt May. It's got just enough of that ultimate Marvel Aunt May in her without being like a carbon copy of such. And did you take a good look at who voices characters in the film, guys? Because they got some pretty good voice talent here. So do you know who voices the Prowler in this movie, Red?
No.
It's Mahershala Ali. It's Cottonmouth from Luke Cage Season 1.
Well, he was much better here than he was as Cottonmouth.
I don't know. I really liked his Cottonmouth. Alfre Woodard is a great actress, but I just didn't like Mariah.
The problem with Cottonmouth was they killed him off way too fast in that series.
Yeah. And Liv Schreiber as Kingpin, which, yeah, I can go with that. I didn't much care. When you guys think, like, in the animated appearances of Kingpin, when you look at Kingpin, do you expect that Bronx-y, Brooklyn-y accent to come out of Kingpin, or should he sound a little more refined?
I expect the man, well, let me put it this way.
For me, when I read Kingpin in comics, it's Kelsey Grammer's voice right here.
That's not a bad one. To me, this is how I imagine his accent, his enunciation, his vocal soundings. I imagine a man who grew up dirt poor, who grew up with a dad who was a common criminal, who was a common criminal himself, but strived to raise himself above that to be someone who's refined, cultured. Like, you know, one of the things I would give the Netflix Daredevil series praise for is their Kingpin, because Vincent D'Onofrio embodied that, because you could hear that in his voice. You could hear that, you know, he has some of that low class,
barely restrained rage.
Well, that low class Bronx in his voice, but he's trying to refine that and sound cultured. But and I think that's what he's supposed to be. It's like, it's a great line from, have you ever seen Silence of the Lambs? There's a great line from Hannibal Lecter. You know, all that hard work with your accent, but you're barely hiding the fact that just one generation ago you're poor white trash.
No, I love Silence of the Lambs, and I know that line. And I like what Red said about Kelsey Grammer being the voice to Kingpin, because you take Liv Schreiber's Kingpin, and you take the late, great Roscoe Lee Brown, who voiced him in the 90s Fox animated series, and I think Kelsey Grammer is like a good balancing act between the two. Like, you get that very stately-sounding voice, but you also get that, you know, sense of menace behind him. But I mean, yeah, they had other great all around. The voice cast was great. I mean, you had Hailee Steinfeld, who's the female lead in the Bumblebee movie that's currently in theaters, as Gwen Stacy, Spider-Woman. Nicolas Cage as Spider-Man Noir, which was an absolute delight. And, well, my favorite alternate Spider-Man in this movie, and as much as I love Spider-Ham, he's not my favorite. It's Jake Johnson as midlife crisis Spider-Man. You know, he's got a bit of a gut. He's kind of burnt out. He's divorced from Mary Jane. He's stopped caring, and it's one of the best relationships in the film, like how Miles the new him. Captain Kirk.
Chris Pine.
Yeah, how he voices the... Because I guess they're kind of going for an Ultimate Marvel vibe with Miles' world, and Chris Pine voices that world Spider-Man, who unfortunately dies really early in the film, and he offers to mentor Miles, and then he gets this new mentor, Jake Johnson Spider-Man, who couldn't care less. So
one thing I think that's fantastic is Chris Pine, by the way, he hit it out of the park for a you know, young 20s, mid-20s Spider-Man, out of the park, Chris Pine, surprise from left field, amazing, amazing portrayal. Talk about source material, this book, you know, if you want to, like, get, you know, any readers want to get a semblance of what this book is based off of, don't go into the Spider-Verse comics, because it's about energy-sucking vampires, and there'll be very little to no resemblance to this movie. This movie obviously takes a lot of inspiration from Spider-Man, the first crossover between 616 Peter and Miles Morales. Fantastic book. I think it's one of the last good books Bendis did before he went fucking nuts.
Well, that's not too far off. I mean, and obviously there's that and the actual Spider-Verse event. Like, there's shades of it. I mean, why else would we have Peter Porker here? Although I did read rumors, and it's probably just fanboy rumors, and dear God, I wish this would have been true, is they would have brought in Spider-Man as... there's rumored they wanted to bring him in, and they just couldn't get the rights squared away.
Yeah, the film rights for him are complicated, because I think one of those Japanese companies owns it, and...
It's Toei, isn't it?
I don't think it's Toei. That's the thing. It's.
I know. Would you like to have seen Leo Pardon and Spider-Man in this film, Red?
I think it would have been over the top.
I think the movie had just enough Spider-Man to make it work, because they had enough to make it interesting, enough to get some good gags, enough to get some pretty funny lines from Nick Cage, but. I think if they flooded this with Spider-Man, you're going to have a case of too much cast, not enough story.
Yeah.
And that's thank definitely... Go ahead, Red.
I said, thank you for pointing that out, Red.
Yeah, no, there's great cast. I mean, and the story of the film is... I mean, it's stupidly simple, or simply put... Kingpin is the head of Alchemax, which is like this scientific research corporation. He's built was it a particle collider or?
It is some sort of collider.
Yeah, so this the thing in Bern, Switzerland. He's got a particle collider. He's trying to search the multiverse and find a version of his wife and son who died in a car crash after discovering he was a super criminal. And cosmic walls are broken, and these five disparate, you know, alternate spider people are sucked into Miles' world. You know, we got Gwen Stacy, Spider-Woman, Spider-Man Noir, you know, the Peter Porker, and the Midlife Crisis Spider-Man.
You missed one.
Oh, yeah, and Penny Parker, who's a... It's what if Spider-Man Spider-Man mixed with the Neon Genesis Evangelion.
And what's really weird about that to me, I mean, sorry for interrupting, but what's really weird about that, her portrayal is she's a very happy, ginky, kind of anime girl. But if you read the comic that she was from, she's much more of a cold, calculating Rei Ayanami type.
Very much so. I mean, out of the alternate Spider-Man, which one did you like the most, Red?
Out of the alternates, I'd probably say it's either Peter Parker B or Gwen Stacy.
I love the because Miles is going to like this, I guess, would you call that a prep school?
That is a prep school. That's exactly what
okay.
it is.
Okay, well, I've never really seen a real prep school other than what's in movies and that. But yeah, Miles goes into this prep school and he meets Gwen, who introduces her to this Wanda, which is some great comedy in and of itself. But then is, because he doesn't have full control of his spider abilities yet, so his hand sticks to Gwen's hair. And then, she gets that kind of cool, punky, shaved hair. I liked it.
I thought that was horrible.
Myself, I thought that was a bad change, because in the commercials and stuff, they showed Gwen Stacy with normal hair. Then why suddenly they gave her the shaved head for a joke? It was kind of weird.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and I should say, with the plus, like the other Spider-Men are brought into Miles' world, and slowly but surely their molecules are... They're literally... what do you call it? Not spazzing, glitching.
Yes.
And eventually they're going to die. Like, their molecules are going to disperse and they'll die if they don't go back to their home universes. And they eventually team up and defeat the Kingpin and his superpowered minions, one of whom is Miles' uncle, Aaron, who's voiced by Mahershala Ali, as he's the ultimate comics prowler. And I really like the scenes with him where Miles goes over to his place after, he doesn't really want to go to that prep school. And, his uncle's got the quintessential of bachelor pad. He's blasting Biggie and, being a cool uncle and teaching Miles how to do the shoulder move. Hey.
No, honestly. No. It's hey.
Yeah. And how that came back in the final battle against Kingpin. I love that. But I know what did you like the Uncle Aaron Red, or is it a little cliche?
I think having my discovering that his uncle was actually the Prowler is a good thing with Miles. But in the Ultimate Comics, they took it too far because they gave him two Uncle Bens instead of one, and they eventually retconned it, but. They killed his mother in order to give him the whole Uncle Ben thing after killing his Uncle Aaron.
And then they brought her back when they merged the Ultimate with 616, I think. But
that was not a merger. That was them bringing Miles over and only Miles over. They didn't do anything else. They didn't merge any other concepts from the Ultimate Universe. It was a waste of that was a waste of a comic event.
That they actually brought a couple other things over from the Ultimate Universe, but that's a discussion for another day.
Consequence.
A couple of things, but like I said, that's a conversation for another day. I liked Uncle Aaron and the whole, doing the urban spelunking thing, going down into the, the subway system and finding a wall. And I love how Miles is an artist and he's, into tagging somewhat because he likes to draw up the cool, hi, my name is Miles stickers and slap them all over the place, which is a good gag. Because
to me sounds, how people always complain that when people write movies or TV series, they're always out of touch because they always give references to their generation.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole tagging thing is our generation. Not Miles' generation. So that to me sounded like when I saw that, I felt like it was out of touch.
I can see that. I mean, I enjoyed that aspect of his character that, he's this hip young kid. Like when he's walking to school with all his gear and that, and he's like, hey, how's it going? And he's like a man about town and everyone knows him. And he's like a cool kid, which is the opposite of Peter Parker. And then I loved him seeing that scene, watching the spider inch closer and closer to, Miles while he's, throwing up that piece on the wall. And then when the spider actually bites him, you think it's going to be like this huge thing because you see the venom getting into his system. And then he's just like, smack, and wipes it off his hand. It's, he doesn't like spaz out and fall into a mini coma the way Peter did in the first Raimi movie.
Well, one thing I have to mention that I did not, that I had an issue with this series was definitely this movie was definitely a problem with there was a weird thing going on with the frame rate, where it almost felt like stop motion in some parts.
Yeah, I mean, given that the animation, which is like this weird cell shading, you know, computer generated animation, I mean, I can see how there were definitely some parts that looked like more fake than others.
Well, they created this really, really weird Doppler effect that while not like headache inducing, was off and took you out of the movie. And like I said, it'll take a lot for me to find major complaints about this movie, because this movie was overall enjoyable. Like I said, second best Spider-Man movie I've ever seen. Fantastic. I enjoyed a Peter B. Parker. What I really enjoyed was the fact that every time that a new spider person showed up, they took the time to do an introduction. I love the fact that they showed like a comic book falls on the table, and it's their comic. And I love just the comic book visuals of it. I love the fact that they actually use Peter Parker's real comic book origin, because so many people forget it.
That he was bitten by, he was an ordinary spider until he was bitten by a radioactive pig.
Yes!
Who was Aunt May, and then he, you know, bamboozled the poor lady who was basically driven insane, and, oh no, I'm your nephew Peter, and that's how that went. But I like that, how you get the Chris Pine Spider-Man, then you get the Jake Johnson Spider-Man, and then they do Gwen, and then Spider-Ham, Penny, and Noir do it. They do it all at the same time, and it's like making fun of the fact the last, like in Homecoming, they don't do the origin, which is something I've loved. One of my favorite things in Homecoming is they didn't do the origin, because it shows that Marvel / Disney are finally understanding that the character is literally part of our DNA now. We know the origin. So they're having some fun making fun of it like that. And we do have it that final time with Miles, you know, towards the end of the film. And, I mean, I love that. But I love the fact that he has an uncle. Well, it's not an Uncle Ben origin. It's an Uncle Aaron origin.
Well, what I love is the fact that I think it's relatable to a lot of kids that, you know, your dad is the authority figure, your uncle is the fun figure that lets you skirt by some things while still trying to encourage you. I love that, because I think that speaks to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I know, what did you think of how they handled Miles' origin in the film, Red?
I like the film's origin of Miles.
Mm-hmm.
It's... He's always been, when they first created him, he's always been the Black Peter Parker.
Oh, yes.
And he's never been his own character. And I like how they tried to make him his own character. And they actually gave him a unique personality and a bit of a unique George. Like, he still had the loss that Spider-Man needs in order to be Spider-Man.
He needs that galvanizing moment.
Yeah. And it was different than just his uncle, like him messing around and his uncle paying for it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, you know, Peter and Uncle Ben, like it really took Uncle Ben dying to have Peter turn that corner, and, you know, great power, great responsibility. And, you know, that's another thing I love in the film, where, because like Peter, like Spider-Man in this universe, like Chris Pine Spider-Man is like this media darling. They're for as far as we know, there's no J. Jonah Jameson talking shit about him. You know, he had a Christmas album, and you get to hear Chris Pine singing a version of the Spider-Man version of Jingle Bells, Batman Smells over the closing credits. But how Spider-Man has this media franchise in this universe, and like the licensed comics and all that. And it goes to, like you said, Red, with Miles having his own character, which is my favorite thing about the movie, is Miles is an actual character. They're not just cut and pasting Miles from the comic.
Yeah.
Also, I love his hair. Like, if there's one thing that bothers me about Spider-Man, Miles Morales in the comics, is he's got that you know, Michael B. Jordan, you know, buzzed head like that, and like a million other black male black characters in comics. Like, he looks like a mini Jon Stewart, you know, but in this one, you know, he's got the kind of bushy hair and, you know, gives him a little more personality. And like, Shameik Moore is the guy who voices Miles in this movie. And I love that, how he's always singing the song. It's, I think it's Sunflower. It's on the soundtrack, which is the first soundtrack or anything I've bought off of iTunes in forever, you know, late Christmas present to me. But how he has to calm down to unstick himself, and he has to sing that song, and it just leads to some great comedy in the film. Especially when they're trying to break into Dr. Octavius's lab in the Alchemax building.
There's definitely lots of things that this has done that has improved Miles Morales, because, like you said, Miles Morales was always like a black Peter Parker, and he never was interesting on his own in the comics. I mean,
and a lot of things about Miles is they forget that he's also half Spanish, so you never see that. You always see how he's pretty much just black in the comics, but in this they actually take the time to point out, hey, he's Spanish, because the Scorpion doesn't speak English. He's speaking Spanish, and Miles actually responds to him.
Yeah. Because his dad's black in the comics, the mom's Spanish, and, I mean, they give her... I know, I've heard people complain about the quote-unquote stereotypes used in this film, like how the mom's Spanish, so of course she's got to have a Spanish accent, and I was like, is that really a stereotype, or the... Is it wrong to have a mixed race couple?
What I think that was really fantastic is the implications and the call outs to the Raimi films, specifically the Raimi films. They said they did some call outs to the Mark Webb films, but I didn't see that many, if any. But you know, we had the spider dance, of course. But one thing that really struck me was when they showed the Uncle Ben moment. They modeled Uncle Ben to look mostly like what he did in the comics, but he looked almost, you know, there was definitely some Cliff Robertson in there, too.
Yeah, well, they took the audio of, you know, with great power, there must also come great responsibility from the first Raimi film. And there's such so many great nods. Like, when they go into the spider shed in Aunt May's backyard, and how Jake Johnson's like, oh, yeah, I got something like this in my universe. Yeah, totally. You know, there's this. And then it goes down. He's basically got, like, this whole, like, spider cave set up. And you see this. They keep calling it the spider buggy. And everywhere I've seen video reviews of this movie, I've read some articles, it's the fucking Spider-Mobile. Get it right, people.
It is the Spider-Mobile, yes.
You see that. And then you have, like, the Batman. You see the spider computer, and you have, like, that chambers of all the costumes, and you see, like, the rubber Electro suit he used when he fought Electro in the 90s. You see the big-time Tron audio suit, and there's so many, like, if you're a huge Spider-Man fan like me, you'll recognize all that stuff. I mean, what did you guys think of the Spider Cave?
I thought it was fun. I think it was a little over the top, but it was purposefully over the top. The producers said that it was their intention to show that the Chris Pine Spider-Man was, and I quote them, the most competent of the Spider-Men.
I can see that. Did you like the Spider Cave, Red?
I thought it was a little pretentious.
It didn't make you smile at all?
I'm quoting the movie.
Yeah. I know, man, I know. I know. What was there anything in the Spider Cave, or what other nods to other Spider-Man media did you enjoy in the film, or that you saw?
Well, for me, the biggest nod to Spider-Man media was Spider-Man B. That was probably my favorite character. Like, when he and Miles are arguing on the rooftop, and Miles starts to quote, "With great power comes..." Then he cuts him off. He's like, "Shut up!
Don't need finish to hear that sentence.
I've heard it a million times." And you get it. Like, he's depressed and
he's burnt out.
He's burnt out. And he's at his rope's end, and he doesn't want to fucking do it anymore.
And
I think, like, the most subtle thing, the thing that actually kind of made me kind of choke up when I was watching it, was when he confronts Aunt May. And you can hear him, he says, "Hey, Aunt May," and you can hear the frog in his throat. And he's trying to hold back crying.
Yeah, no, I definitely got that.
It's a great scene, by the way. It's a fantastic scene. Yeah. The voice acting behind it, stellar. But especially when Aunt May says, "You look tired." It's you could tell that there's something going on there. And like I said, fantastic voice acting. But, you know, I mean, it's just my opinion that the similar scene that was in Spider-Man was just emotionally hits you even harder.
Yeah, and because that's after Peter took a bullet trying to protect Captain America on the Brooklyn Bridge, and then he sacrificed himself. But I agree with Red that I got choked up there. I'll tell you where I got, and I think a lot of people got choked up, is when we get the Stan Lee cameo.
I love that. It's like, it always fits.
I actually got teared up, and the thing was, people in the theater when I was watching actually started to cry. Like, I could hear them fucking crying.
Yeah.
And Stan Lee showed up.
Well, yeah, no, like, I was teared, like, I teared up. Like, I was crying a bit, like, it wasn't making noise, just, yeah, I could feel the tears falling. There was a couple of kids who were, you know, like, Spider-Man died. Like, I mean, yeah, this is, like, going to be, like, for some kids, this is going to be their Optimus Prime dying of this generation. You know, there's, I could hear some adults sniffing too. But yeah, it's like, you know, it used to be a friend of mine. And I love the joke they made. It always fits. Eventually, he smiles, and then you see him hitch the thumb at the no refund sign, which just made me laugh. It's like, man, I needed it after that moment. And then the end credits thing where you see that quote from Stan Lee about, you know, somebody does the right things because it's the right thing to do, like that. I got, you know, choked up again there too. Because
I was thinking of the credits. I love the after credits scene where you have Spider-Man 2099.
Oscar Isaac, Poe Dameron voices that.
Yes. I just love that. It's because I love the computer AI talking to him. I love the, you know, it's not a gizmo. It's not a doodad. It's a gizmo or something like that.
It's not a goober. It's a gizmo.
Yeah.
Or gadget. It's a gadget. And that's, like, again, another nod to the Spider-Verse crossover where they develop these wristwatch-like devices that keep people from, like, dying in the alternate universes. I also like when where Peter in the beginning, where Chris Pine Spider-Man goes like head first into was that Spider-Man, like, where you see like the interconnected web of all these alternate universes, and it looks like a spider web, which is another nod to the web of life.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I love which universe Miguel goes to.
Yeah. Go back to the beginning. 1967.
And it's like the whole pointing thing, which is based off of an actual episode of that Spider-Man cartoon with a Spider-Man imposter, where there was actually 3 minutes of them pointing at each other.
Yeah. I mean, what did you think of Miguel going back to the Spider-Man 67 cartoon, Red? That make you chuckle?
It made me chuckle, but I didn't watch it in the theaters. I actually walked out before that.
Oh, well, there's more than enough, you know, videos of that on YouTube. You can see it. But it's also the second Stan Lee cameo in the film, because Stan Lee, I believe, voiced the J. Jonah Jameson in that scene.
Yes. For people who don't know, you know, lots of people try to look for the inspiration for the J. Jonah Jameson character. A little known fact is for a brief period in the 60s, Stan Lee did shave his mustache and a pencil mustache and looked like that.
Oh, wow. But yeah, and I love it wasn't just like Miguel with like the slick CGI animation when he walks out of the shadows and he straps on the goober, which I'm probably going to end up using that word in referring to stuff like that from now on. And he goes back in time, and then he's not draw. He goes into that animation, like that cheap cell animation looking style. So it's not just like CGI Spider-Man 2099, you know, entering, you know, the world of 1967. He actually goes into that animation style, which is, again, just goes back to, like, this film is beautifully animated. Although, if you know anybody that it suffers from epilepsy, do not show them this movie. Because the colors are so vibrant and energetic, and they pop so much, and flashing and quick cuts, you're going to set someone off. Guaranteed.
So no Kurt Eichenwalls?
Exactly.
Well, he's too busy, looking up tentacle porn.
I hesitate to say this, but I would very much consider the train fight or the train scene in this movie on par, if not just slightly better than the one in Spider-Man 2. Because you have this great scene where after the funeral and Miles is dealing with all these conflicting emotions and, you know, he's got powers and he goes to, you know, Chris Pine, Spider-Man's grave. And then that's when we get the, you know, Peter B. Parker, you know, so, okay, one more time. Like, you get that origin. You see him, he gets laid out by Miles' Venom Blast for the first time, and then he hitches a ride in a train, and it's just some great comedy. Also, it shows how tough Spider-Men are, because with the shots that Jake Johnson Spider-Man took, that dude should be one massive walking bruise.
Well, that's always been the continuity of Spider-Man, was he's always been pretty damn tough.
Yeah. I know. Have you guys gone and listened to any of this? Or what's your opinion of the soundtrack and the music used in the film? Like, I love it.
I think the orchestral stuff was fantastic. I was never a big fan of, I guess you call it hip-hop, so I could take that part or leave it, honestly.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Red?
It was good. I liked it.
Yeah. Now, the two songs that I like the most out of the soundtrack, there's you hear it in some of the trailers and the TV commercials, is a song called What's Up Danger. Let's see, it's performed by Blackway and Black Caviar, two names I'm completely unfamiliar with. And then there's Save the Day, and there's way too many people to mention there, but that's one of the songs that there's nods to, like, talking about saving the day and fighting supervillains, and it's as close to a quote-unquote theme song as the film gets, but it's still good. I mean, Ben's right, folks. The orchestral score is great. This is the first thing I bought in iTunes in forever, and this is the first soundtrack that I've heard in I don't know how long that I actively enjoy.
Honestly, I think they missed an opportunity. When it comes to hip hop, is the movie set in New York? What is the most popular New York fucking hip hop group? And why didn't they use them? Because they also fucking include superheroes in their songs.
I don't know this. I'm not a hip hop guy, so.
The Wu-Tang Clan.
Okay, well, hip hop. Hippity hippity hip hip hop. Okay,
I don't know any. It's quite all right, Red. I mean Ben, sorry, but no, I agree with Red. They could have at least had like Method Man or Red Man or hell the RZA on here, something like that. But for what they have on the soundtrack, it's great. I mean, you got some DJ Khalil on here, Jaden Smith, like the progeny of the Fresh Prince. Has a track on here, and
I was about to say.
Enough said. Don't expand on it. Move on.
Yes, Dad.
That's what he said.
No. So yeah, soundtrack's great. They even have like not before the credits roll, like you know, you see Miles getting into his groove at the prep school. He gets into his groove as Spider-Man. You know, I love that line. I finally met my roommate. Like, we have, you know, in the comic books, he's named Genki, who And it's basically Genki in Homecoming, except he's Ned Leeds for some reason, which I always kind of found confusing. But, you know, he meets his roommate, and, you know, it ends with him going to bed, and then a portal to Spider-Gwen's universe opens up, so she's found a way to get in contact with him and, you know, potentially a sequel, which, with all the bank this money's been making, because I look at the wiki here.
A sequel's happening. I just hope they avoid energy vampires for a while, because
I don't think they're going to use the inheritors in the sequel.
I just think that
is way too complicated.
I just think with all the contributions GMS has done to Spider-Man, the inheritors was the worst thing.
Well, at best, they could just use Morlun. If they just use Morlun, no, they don't bring in his family.
Put it down. It's rotten. It's disgusting.
Okay.
Morlun is literally, like, you ever watch The Simpsons? You know that fucking sandwich that Homer has behind his bed and makes him fucking sick, but he refuses to stop eating it?
Give me a minute with the sandwich. Are you going to eat it? Yes.
Yes. That's fucking Morlun, all right?
Okay,
something that Marvel won't stop fucking eating, but it's killing them.
Actually, after the Spider-Geddon storyline, they've pretty much done away with those characters, so don't worry.
No, Morlun is still alive. They actually made the point that Morlun did not die in Spider-Geddon. Morlun's the only one. They saved him specifically because Marvel editorial has this rule: you don't kill villains, no matter how shitty they are.
Right. But yeah, I was looking at the stats on the Wikipedia here. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse at this point, on a budget of $90 million, is just topped about $281 million. So, there's going to be a sequel.
No, that's good. They almost tripled their money, but
they have tripled their money.
But that's very good, and especially for an animated flick. The problem is, and I hate to say this because I love this movie. Let me just put that way. I hate to say this, but this is true. For superhero movies, $280 million is kind of pathetic.
No, it's not. It's a simple little animated film based on a beloved character. It's done very well. Not every comic book movie has to make $1 billion. Just because it didn't make as much as every other comic book movie does not tell you about its quality, does not tell you whether or not you'll enjoy it.
You want to hear something that'll make you sad?
I don't know why you have to make me sad after I made a point like that, Ben.
Venom, $855 million.
Yeah, I know that. It doesn't depress me. It's surprising, in fact, given how imperfect the film is.
Imperfect. Wow, saying, that's kind.
Ben, do you want me to start screaming?
Continue.
I'm just saying, thank you. I'm just saying how much a film makes is not a clear indicator of how good the movie is.
No, and of course that's it isn't.
Also, but just saying, is that... And I've talked to quite a few of my friends on Facebook and here in Saskatoon who have seen the film. I've talked to a few people who said, well, the reviews aren't that good. Or what reviews they've seen say the movie's not that good. And it's like, I'm telling our listeners now, if you judge the worth of a movie without seeing the movie yourself, your opinion is very suspect to me.
That's true. Well, let's talk about more of the villains, because I think they had a good... I wish they had a true Sinister Six. I think they only had, like, four, maybe three.
They had five. Kingpin, Doc Ock, Green Goblin, and it's, like, a very exaggerated version of Ultimate Green Goblin. They have this cyborg biomechanical scorpion and the Prowler, who's essentially the... Oh, and Tombstone. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Technically, there's 6 supervillains, but only 5 of them really work together as a group.
There's also Doc Ock.
No, he's part of that 5, because you got Green Goblin fighting Chris Pine, Spider-Man in the beginning. Then you have Kingpin, Doc Ock, Tombstone, Scorpion, and Kingpin.
He said Kingpin twice.
Okay. Prowler. That's what I meant to say. But yeah, no, the villains were great in here. I mean,
I just wish they had a true Sinister Six.
Well, maybe we'll get a Sinister Six in the sequel.
Because if you're going to do a group of Spider-Man villains, there are more than two. You have to make it six just to make it the Sinister Six.
Or maybe it'll be the Sinister Syndicate. And it'll be like 12 of them. Who knows? We'll see.
Or maybe you guys are big nerds and just shut up.
So... Again, overall,
this movie, okay, that was this, good, Rand. I'm giving it to you.
This movie is fantastic. Again, I think that that's just fair to say. And again, I wasn't disparaging on the quality of this movie at all, JT, when I was saying that. You know, I'm just saying that budget-wise, Sony Pictures has a really weird way of picking which vehicles to make sequels out of, and you know. I just feel like unless this thing tops over $300 million, they're going to shelve this sequel for a while.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the thing is with Sony and their quote-unquote Spider-Verse that they're trying to build with, you know, this and the Venom sequel and whatever else they do down the line, because apparently they still want to do a Sinister Six, is they're DC's trying too hard to catch up to Marvel, and Sony's not trying hard enough. Is what I would say. And if I'm going to ask you guys, what's your, I'll go last on this, but what is your favorite moment or your favorite line in the film?
Oh, moment for me is when Miles is preparing to make that leap of faith. And you hear all that dialogue, you know, in the forefront, all the thoughts going in his head. That line, "You were the best of us, Miles." You know, him thinking about his family, what's at stake, and him just taking that jump.
Yeah, and you hear that, take that leap of faith.
Yes.
How about you, Red?
I think the moment that had the most emotional impact on me, that includes the Stanley cameo, is when Peter B. sees Mary Jane in that meeting.
All right, you deserve so much bread.
I think that scene was great, but at the same time, I feel like they played it too much for laughs, because this is a, you know, like you said, this is a broken man and his anguish, and it feels like this is something that, like, maybe, you know, I wish there was a better scene of those two talking, and I know that again, they were trying to go for some levity, especially at the nth hour of this film. But I don't hate it, but I wish it was different.
Hey, did I shit on your best moment? Thanks, Ben.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
The whole banquet scene had some of my favorite comedy. Like, there's no way it's going to be this sizzy. It's actually the season. They'd all put on like bow ties and walk right through, and no one blinks at them. And also has that little recurring joke whenever you looked at Inside Spider and Penny's in there, and she's always like working with one hand and then like shoving candy out of that hopper next to her seat into her face. My favorite moment, an honorable mention, is when Scorpion's fighting Spider-Ham, and he's like, "What's the matter? You don't like cartoons?" Like, John Mulaney, who I think is kind of underrated as a comedian. I loved him as Peter Porker. But my favorite moment is the final sequence of Miles swinging through the city, you know, as Spider-Man at the end, which is, you know, a flip side reflection of, you know, when he was going to school in the beginning of the film. And it's reminiscent of that final scene in the first Spider-Man, or first Raimi Spider-Man, where he's swinging through the city, and, you know, you just get this epic feel. And this one, it just kind of grounds him and illustrate how much fresher, you know, Miles is. And it's just one of those, that moment that just, this is everything I've ever wanted in a comic book movie. It's like a pure distillation of what I wanted. So that's my favorite moment. But yeah. And Nicolas Cage, or Spider-Man Noir, taking Rubik's Cube back to his monochromatic universe and basically becoming a god.
What I liked about Nicolas Cage is the fact that Nicolas Cage just wanted to be Spider-Man. I also like the fact that you don't hear it often. Most of the time it's just Nick Cage being Nick Cage, but there are a couple lines where he is trying to do some sort of Humphrey Bogart thing.
Yeah. No, he was good, and like I said, Mulaney was good as Spider-Ham. The alternate Spider-Man and woman were good. It's just, yeah, that's that final scene of Miles, like, you know, accepting his destiny and, you know, becoming the hero that New York City deserves. So, I can't honestly think of anything else we could say about the film.
Not really. I think we all of us like it. All of us think that it's definitely worth at least one or two watches, and I can't think of anything bad to say about it.
Yeah. Would you say this is a day one purchase when it comes out on disc for you guys?
It might be a digital purchase for me. I don't really buy physical media anymore.
Yeah, how about you, Red?
Same. I don't really buy physical media anymore.
Well, I guess I'm the only one that likes real stuff anymore. So I don't know. I like having physical media, but that's me. So.
Yes, it is.
So out of 10, I mean, this is an 8 for me.
I'd give it an 8.
Red?
I'd give it an 8.5.
Not
9.95? No.
All right. Well, I guess this is our thoughts on Into the Spider-Verse. Go see it.
Yes. So this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.